Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Power to Be You. My name is Sandra Bueno and I am the founder of Live and Learn Enterprises and the creator of the Power to Be You platform. And today is Thursday, December 6, 2007, and it is my distinct pleasure and honor to have today's guest on the line today, Steve Siebold. And I am just beyond myself because Steve really represents everything that Power to You, to Be You is about, which is about awareness, accountability, and empowerment through education. Empowerment by not doing what everyone else is doing and by bringing in the information that is out there and that is brought to you through distinctions, through testimonies, just through someone's ability to believe that they have a mission and a vision. And Steve embodies that 100% and over. Let me just first start by letting you know that Steve is a world-renowned speaker, a world-renowned coach. He is a leader, an entrepreneur. If you go and you Google his name, Steve Siebold, or you Google his company, one of his companies, which is the company that he created with Bill Gove a few years back, who is the father of professional speaking, that will serve as an education in itself because Steve has come across so many of the people whom we regard as industry professionals and as leaders in every segment of our life and business and philosophy and being authors and being just performers of world-class levels. So today I am going to present Steve. I don't want to say all that he is because there's just so much to talk about regarding him, but Steve is also the author of 177 Mental Toughness Secrets of the World Class, and Steve speaks from experience as he has worked alongside world-class performers, and he is one of them himself. So without saying more, I'd like to present Steve Siebold. Steve, are you on?
I'm here, Sandra. Thanks. Appreciate the introduction.
No, that's, you know what, it's, I can't do you justice. I think that you're just honestly it's just such a leader, and I'm very much in awe by your experience, by your knowledge, and by your ability to have put together this book, which I will say that it is the 21st century rendition of Think and Grow Rich.
Well, thanks. That's a big compliment. I appreciate that. Luckily it's done well in the U.S. and actually all over the world. So it's been real lucky.
Well, you know, as we get started, I want first to let the callers know the number that they're going to be able to call in and ask you questions as well at the last half an hour of our show, which that number is 646-716-8620. But before we do go on, I mean, we have callers right now already on the radio and listening to this the Power to Be You show, but I really want to get down to what this book is about and why you created it.
Well, the premise of the book is really simple. The premise is that there's two levels of thinking we talk about the most, and that's what we call the middle class consciousness, and the other side is the world class consciousness. And just in a nutshell, the middle class consciousness is sort of the way the average person thinks, and then the world class is the way super achievers think. And so we're always trying to look at it. We're trying to balance everything off of those two things. And the idea is really simple. You know, why is it that some people are so much more successful than others? And we say it's based on because most people are middle class thinkers, and they're not middle class people. They're great people. But in terms of their skill, the skill they have in terms of thinking, they think in terms of middle class space, which is rooted in fear and scarcity. And it's more about survival than it is about success. Whereas the world-class thinkers seem to see the world as their playground, and they can do anything they want and be anything they want and have anything they want and give anything they want, and they don't seem to recognize limits. And so the whole book is really all about taking, you know, realizing where you are in terms of your current level of awareness and then raising it hopefully to the world-class level, or if you already are at the world-class level, trying to stay there more consistently.
And you know what? What really struck me and what really hit me in the core is the fact that you are, in your book, you are offering the awareness of what these people have done in their own lives to achieve that level of world-class performanceship. And within that, you also offer more education by bringing in books that can prepare the reader for if this is what you know, what you like, or this is what you need, and it's you're bringing a whole different level of education in a book that represents years and years, and I think even generations of thought and generations of action steps and of empowerment, all in one book. You know, that to me is I am just falling over because I just think that this could take the place of a four-year university program, honestly.
Well, that was one of the things that got me in trouble with the New York publishers who were going to publish the book originally, was that they said, well, if we're going to publish the book, and I won't say who the New York publishers were, but the biggest New York publishers there are, said pretty much the same thing to me as the book was unfolding, and they realized it was going to be a good seller, I think, was they said, you're going to have to take all these references out to all these other books, because we're not selling all these other books, we're selling your book, and we want you to take all these references out. And I said, well, you know, I have one voice and I have one philosophy and one opinion, and there are a lot of other really smart people with different opinions, but on the same topic. So I would suggest to people to study all these people that are experts on the subject and then make up their own mind. And they said, well, that's not the book business. You don't understand the book business. And I said, well, maybe, but I understand the personal development business, and that's what we're going to do. And that's why, we ended up not going with a New York publisher.
Well, that's good for you because that's, you know what, you just proved the point. You just proved the point about people who think in the box and people who come with education from another era or their own education or their own interpretation of education, and then they try to apply it to somebody else. You know, and that somebody else, if that somebody else is not aligned with their vision, their purpose, and what it is that they bring that's different from everyone else, they would allow that person to say, okay, you're right. You know what? Let me do the version of what you think I should do.
No, I think you're right. And I mean, they had a lot of things like that, the same kind of thing where, I think it's based on your intention and what, as you call it, your vision, of what you have in mind. And what I want to do is take 20 years of experience about, interviewing the top performers in the world since 1984 in sports and business and the arts and all kinds of different performance fields, and really say, here's what I found that these people do that the average person does not do, and that's why they're so successful. That's why the gap between the rich and the poor, is so, and not just in money, but just in a lot of ways, is so gigantic and getting bigger every day, and it's really to no surprise. And because after you spend 20 years interviewing these top people, you see that they think, it's almost like they're living in a different world. I mean, they think, they see the world, they see their place in the world so differently than the average person. Whereas the average person is just trying to survive. They're trying to pay their light bill. They're just trying to get along and try to stay out of as much trouble as they can and try to live a comfortable life, whereas the top performers are really going after things. And another example, this is the New York publisher said the other thing they told me among probably about a half a dozen items was they said, you have a book with no stories. You have 65,000 words of pure content and resources recommending other books and speakers and CD programs, and I recommend seminars in the book. There's like 84 different resources in there.
Mm-hmm.
They said, you've got to add stories to all this content. The book will sell three times as much with stories. And a couple of them said, we won't publish it without stories, so give examples. And I said, well, giving examples is easy. That's an easy way to write a book. I can give examples in my sleep. I got 20 years experience. But what I wanted to do was take a book and take all this 20 years and say, how can I whittle it down to 200 or 300 words per topic? How can I take something like the idea of getting yourself out of delusion and into objective reality and put it under 300 words, not have a lot of fluff, not have a lot of stories that just add pages to the book and say, here's the content, no stories, here it is, flat out. And then I told him, I said, down the road, there's in speeches, I give speeches all over the place, all over the world, and I tell stories there. But in the book, I wanted it to be solid content, and I wanted all the resources to be there. I wanted to do it right. And I think that's why the book has sold real well, is that I think that comes across. Hopefully it does anyway.
I mean, I just think that there's so much to this. When I told you, I said, Steve, and I thanked you for coming on, because one thing that the listeners need to know is you get paid at least $12,000 for a 90-minute speech.
Right.
That's what it says right on your website. And,
right.
And here I am in awe, because you are someone that has so much experience, having done this, having studied, having put himself out there in the field, having begun with a dream, having begun and taken a mission and gone forward, and truly done what it takes to become a very successful person. And, you know, what you do in your book, and you're bringing in all these people that a lot of us are so aware of. I mean, Bob Proctor is there. He's one of the people that is part of your National Board of Advisors. And if a person goes in there and just looks at the caliber of what you just referred to, these people who are all in their own right, very bright individuals, but who at the end have one thing also in common, which is where you also have mastery in, which is in being an effective communicator and having been a part of the creation that Bill Gove got started with. And this is something that I would like for you to also speak about, because it's one of the things that I just heard today was, behind every master there was a disaster. You know, and it's like,
sure,
when you're taking the steps to become, to self-develop and to learn, there's so many different channels that one takes, but it's about that perseverance, picking up, standing up, looking for different ways through which one can be empowered, through which one can learn. And this is you. I mean, you are an embodiment of this, and I just like for people to really get to hear as much as of your journey and what you've been involved with, so that they realize the value of what you've put in this book.
Well, you know, I appreciate the compliment. I you mentioned Bob Proctor too. Bob and I just worked in Mexico together. He rented out an entire cruise boat for a week, believe it or not, with 1,800 people. And Bob's been a good friend and a mentor for years. We've worked on conventions, spoken on conventions all over the world together. I've probably spoken with him as much or more than any other speaker out there. We've worked a lot of programs together, and I was talking about the other day, as a matter of fact, and we always talk about the idea that, you know, based on what you're saying, that we both kind of had the same road. Now, Bob's about 35 years older than me, but he took the same kind of road as a lot of people do, and the same kind of road I did, and that's that we just studied the top performers and then just copied them. I mean, we just copied their philosophies and their habits and said, okay, you know, this is the way they think, and this is the way the average person thinks, and this is the way the top performers think, and this is the way the average person thinks. I don't understand it maybe in the beginning, but I just copy it. And one of our mentors that we both shared was Bill Gove, the great Bill Gove, known around the world as the father of the professional speaking industry, who ran the Bill Gove Speech Workshop for 50 years, and it's the most successful professional speaking program in the history of the business. And Bob is a 1968 graduate, and I'm a 1996 graduate, and that's right when I met Bob. And what we did in speaking for that part of our success was just to copy the master. I mean, we went to the program, we learned the system, we copied the system. And you know, Bob and I always talk about that, and so do other speakers. I mean, I was talking the other day with Mark Victor Hansen, who was on the cruise boat speaking with us, and Mark said the same kind of thing. He went to the workshop in 1970. Bill was one of the people he copied, among other people, other mentors in other areas. Doug Weed was with us. Doug Weed was just on Fox News as I was waiting to go on the air with you. Doug Weed was just on Fox. I had Fox in the background. He was just on Fox News Live talking about Mitt Romney's speech this morning on religion. Mm-hmm. And he worked in the Bush White House. He was with us for a week down there, too. And he said the same thing, because there was only about five or six of us, and we were for a week, and we sat on a cruise boat and talked about this stuff while we were speaking, in between speaking dates, or speaking, while we were speaking. And everyone says the same thing. They take you copy. I figured out a long time ago, Sandra, I don't know how you feel about this, but, you know, and I'm not saying this is for Doug or Mark Victor or Bob Proctor, but for me, you know, a while ago, I figured, okay, I want this whole big life, you know, this whole life, or big to me anyway. You know, this is what I really want, and I was pretty clear about the vision, and I pretty much knew I wasn't smart enough to make it happen on my own. I mean, I just realized that. I wasn't going to be able to figure out how to become an international professional speaker, author, you know, consultant to Fortune 500 companies. I knew I couldn't. I didn't know how to do that, and I wasn't sure. I was pretty sure I wasn't smart enough to figure out. But the one thing I knew was that after interviewing all these top people was I saw what they did. Now, some of them were smart enough to figure it out, no question. But most of them weren't. Most of them, what they told me anyway, was that they had mentors and they copied people and they found people to help them guide the way. And then they just did exactly what they told them to do to the letter. And they didn't question it and they put the work out. But they set the path. So I tell companies all the time, I was talking to a corporation, one of the biggest companies in the world, GlaxoSmithKline, yesterday, And that's what I told him. I said, you know, we just look at the top performers and we just copy them. You know, we just copy their philosophies and their habits, and we look at the way they think and we just copy what they do. And then all of a sudden you get the result and everyone says, well, geez, you're a genius. Well, not really. Just only smart enough to know that to really get where you want to go, all you need is smarter people around you.
And
if you're smart enough, great, you know.
And you know what? And that's the whole, I mean, that's the whole awareness, because one of the purpose when I created Power to Be You was to say, I want to give those people the opportunity that who will say down the road, you know what, I never had a chance. Sorry, you now have a chance, and you even say it. I have your program that's an audio file, and one of the things that you say is a work in progress and no excuses left. There is a map here to follow. There are leaders here who've been there, and this is something that goes in history when you're talking about personal development. It's, you do not have to recreate the wheel. You know, there's no reason and no purpose to go back to square one when people have already done it, been there, done it, and now you can take their knowledge, mirror what they've done, and then adapt it to who and what you are about.
I agree, and I mean, and so many of the top people that you know that especially high profile people. I mean, one of the clients I had for years was a gentleman named Walter Haley, who is not one of the most famous people in the public, but certainly was behind the Lyndon and Johnson administration, a multi-billionaire, and he died just a few years ago. But I used to work for he used to hire me. He had companies all over the country, and he lived in the hill country of Texas, and he used to pick me up at San Antonio Airport in a Rolls Royce limousine, believe it or not, the only one I've ever seen, the only one I know of in existence, not a new one either, but an older one with all fixed up. Really, he's a real character. And I remember riding the first time he hired me in San Antonio, probably 10 years ago. We're driving back. He picks me up, and the driver taking us down to Kerrville, down there where he had his ranch. And I was going to speak to one of his dental companies that he owned. And he said down there, I said, you know, what's the secret to your success? And I remember saying that the first time. And he said, I just find genius and I copy it. And that's what he said, exactly. He says, I find genius and I copy it. This guy sold his first company when he was 23 years old for $72 million. Now, this is in the 1960s we're talking about, $72 million. He was 23 years old. The guy knew something. He was brilliant. He was really a smart guy. But that's what he said. He used to call me Stevie. He said, Stevie, just find genius and then copy it. And, of course, that's what I told him about Bill Gove. And he was a student of Bill Gove as well in speaking. And he said, just what you did with Bill. He said, you found him. You told Bill what you wanted to do. And, you know, when I went to Bill Gove, I said, he said, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to be, in 5 years or less, I want to be an international speaker and author and consultant, and here's what I want to do. I showed him the whole thing, and I laid it out for him. He looked at it for a few minutes, and he said, yeah, I can show you exactly how to do that. And I said, really? You can show me how to do that? Because I've been chasing around trying to figure it out, and I just, you know. He goes, yeah, I've put more people on the map like that than anyone in history. He says, I know exactly how to do it. He said, but here's the rule. You're going to have to follow what I say, my direction, to the letter. And as soon as you tell me, oh, I'm not sure I can do that, or I don't know if I really believe what you're saying, I guess I'm done. He says, I'm 84 years old. I don't have a lot of time to fool around. He said, so if you want to follow it, I'll show you exactly how to do it. It's not a mystery to me. He said, but you're going to have to do the work. And that's exactly what happened, almost 5 years to the date. I mean, just amazing, you know. But the guy knew how to do it. He'd done it for 50 years. So, and then people say, wow, you know, you've got this, you know, outstanding career, and you've done all these different things, and you speak all over the world and consult all these big companies. Yeah, that's true, but I didn't do it on my own. I learned it from a master, and I just copied genius.
Now let me.
That's the truth of it. I wish I could take more credit.
Now let me ask you the other side, which is going to balance the statement. What did it take for you to copy that genius? What did it take? What was that? Because it didn't come by you sitting, and it didn't come by you just taking it easy.
No. Well, it's interesting you say that, because a lot of people don't ask about that. Well, I'll tell you exactly what happened. Bill Gove said to me, he says, let me, he laid it all out. He says, this is what you would have to do. He said, and he asked me a question, which I didn't know was a trick question at the time, because I didn't know him at that. I just had met him, and then I went to his workshop. And he said, what are you willing to do to make this happen? And I said, whatever it takes. He goes, that was the only answer I was going to accept. Because I said, because I don't know how to define it, because I've never done it, so I don't know what that means. And, it was a lot of work. There's no question about it. But I think it's the same way as, you know, I believed in him, and I knew how many people he put on the map, and by following his system for 50 years. I think it's the same thing, you know, as I worked a lot of hours. Yes, I spent an amazing amount of time pushing this. There's no question. I put a lot of work in. But the other side of it is that I knew he was going to be right. I didn't know. I just believed in. I had faith in his system and how based on how many graduates and that he was the father of the entire industry, and always will be. And he was a genius. He knew what to do. So I think it's like, you know, when you're driving, you're real tired, and you're driving across the country or driving to another state or something, and it's 4 in the morning and you're falling asleep. You still push yourself to drive. And I think the reason we do that is because we know we're going to get to the destination. We know if we spend the time, we push ourselves, we're going to get there. The belief is 100%. And I think that's what helped drive me and keep me going and working the hours I worked and to really push it, whereas a lot of people, you know, that tried to break in the business the same time I did, didn't do that. But I think part of it was because I believed it was going to happen. You know, so,
and
again,
opens,
copying genius.
Well, that opens up the segue into the fact that I coined you. I already said, you know what, you're the mental toughness king. You know, mental toughness.
King, wow, I'm a king now. That's pretty good.
You're the king there because, you know, probably, I mean, I'm just really thinking now, that lesson or the lessons that you gathered while working with Bill, this helped you to develop mental toughness.
No question. The success is all, yeah, you talk about the thing you're actually trying to do, you know, which is helpful because it's helpful to be able to be part of, not that I'm the perfect mental toughness specimen by any you know, stretch, but, you know, you do, and as a speaker, when you're working with large corporations and big sales forces like I do every day, you have to some degree, you have to be walking the walk. I mean, you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be, you know, Bill Gates, but I think you have to be a pretty strong performer, otherwise it shows. You know, if you're going to stand in front of a six-figure salesperson and a sales management team of Johnson & Johnson or whoever it is, a big organization, you better be who you say you are. They're going to eat your lunch. And I think that's fair. I think it's fair. So it does make you push to that, yeah.
Now, for the listeners, you can go on, there's an 18-minute video that you show different sections of the work that you've done, and particularly the one that was very unique is where you take the company out in New York and Wall Street and you lead them through an exercise where they need to realize, because mental toughness, a lot of people will say, okay, well, mental toughness, this is how you have to be, and, you know, I really want you to be able to share some of those distinctions as to what mental toughness is and how you can what are the identifiable traits.
Well, I think in a nutshell, it's a big, you know, it's obviously a pretty big topic, but in a nutshell, in my mind, and for my definition, I suppose everyone defines it a little differently, my mind, it's mental toughness is really the ability to control and manipulate your own thoughts for your benefit, to get what you want. So if I can, you know, if I want to become a speaker or I want to become a salesperson or whatever it is I'm trying to go after, I've got to be able to control and manipulate my mind and what I think about on a daily basis, whether it's building new beliefs or world-class philosophies or world-class habits, for example. Then I've got to be able to control and manipulate my thoughts to be able to go that direction. And chances are I'm going to have to change them, because if I had them already, I'd probably be where I want to be. And so I'm going to have to do that. And so it's really about, it's about learning to control your own mind instead of just sort of randomly having different thoughts cross your mind all the time and sort of following, well, almost like a pinball on a pinball machine. So I talk about it in speeches. It's like the consciousness of most people, not that they're not smart or educated, it has nothing to do with it, just based on a lack of training, their thoughts are like pinball on a pinball machine, just sort of bouncing from one bumper to the next. And they sort of just follow wherever the pinball goes. Well, that's fine, but if you're really going to, I think, achieve world-class success, you've got to take that pinball and say, I'm in control now. You're going over to this bumper, and we're not moving until we win, you know, or whatever it is. It's really a lot about controlling, and then realizing that you almost have to, at least in my opinion, look at the way the masses think. And if you want to know how the masses think, watch television. You know, just watch the news. Watch what people buy. You know, we're in a war right now in this country. And every night you turn on TV, you can hear about Britney Spears and Lindsay Lohan and all these other, you know, young actors and entertainers. And there's a whole section of the news on these people. Why? People want to buy it. People want to buy that. They want to listen to that. They want to know about that because they're not so much focused on and their own vision. The biggest selling magazine in the country, in the United States, is the National Enquirer. And I'm not putting anybody down. I'm not, because I've bought the National Enquirer before. I'm not putting it down or saying, you know, anything about that. I just mean it just sort of shows you where the consciousness of people, of the average person is. It's just sort of all over the place. So there's no focused energy going on, so massive success is probably not possible for them unless they learn to take that mental toughness and control it and say, okay, I'm going to focus all my mental energy in this one area until I get what I want. Then they're pretty hard to beat.
And see, and you just in what you just said, there's so many segues that I can take. You speak of the five major levels of conscious awareness, and I do want you to name them, because you also spoke of the masses, you know. And one of the things that I've become very much aware to is living under that mass mentality, that herd-like mentality that other people speak of. It's, you know, it's how do you win that game of life if you are aware that you're a part of that? If you're a part of that mass, what does that mass represent in your mindset? And you've, with what you have, your five major levels of conscious awareness, and even the 25 distinctions that you make between the middle class and the world class, that is it's like a light bulb. You know, really, really people can look at that and say, oh, I see what he means by world class, and I see what he means by the mass. Because when we talk about the mass, what percentage of people fall into the mass or into the mass mentality?
Well, I would say to the, you know, I'll just go through the five levels. You know, we say and give the percentages, and these are just generalizations, of course, but yeah, there are some stats to back these up, and they're probably pretty close to accurate, but this is just just sort of a broad stroke. But we say the lowest level of consciousness is what we call poverty class consciousness, which is, you know, people in a really strong, you know, really poor set of circumstances in the ghetto, maybe third, fourth generation welfare recipients, that type of thing, where, you know, absolute survival is just the name of the game. We say it's about 5% of the population. Then as you go up to the next level, we call it working class consciousness, maybe 10% of the population. These people are focused at a higher level. They're not your welfare recipients, but you know, they're going to work every day and they want to get home, and their vision is probably to retire at 65 and hopefully not have to go to work, because they don't like going to work. They don't like what they do, and it's a little higher level of survival mentality, but that's about it from the poverty class. And then you have the biggest group, which is the middle class, the highest level. These are people who, you know, the average person, the masses, walking down the street, they're going to their jobs every day. They live in a mindset of fear and scarcity. Now they're more comfortable, and their biggest goal is to be comfortable. That's the sort of their we call it their mantra, is to say, you know, I just want to be safe, secure, and comfortable, stay out of trouble. You know, I go to college, and what do? I study where the money is. So they don't study what they love; they study where they think they can make money, even if they don't like it. That kind of mentality, and I think most of us, you know, obviously we're probably brought up in that. I know I was. I was a solid middle class thinker until I was at least 25, and it still comes back all the time. I mean, it's just a lot of programming that's gone on to say, hey, play it safe, don't take too many chances so you don't get hurt. And that's sort of the middle class mindset. It's rooted in fear and scarcity. It's rooted in the idea that pain, you know, the avoidance of pain is more important than the achievement of success. And so that's sort of where my goal is. I'm trying to stay away from pain. That's my number one goal as a middle class thinker. And so I don't really get very far, because all I'm trying to do is avoid pain. And it's kind of sad, because these are educated, smart people. You know, no question about that. It has nothing to do with intelligence or anything like, or upbringing or anything like that. It's just really about consciousness. So then the next level we say is upper class consciousness. And we make this distinction because the upper class consciousness is a high performer, top 10%. These are your people. Some of these people are billionaires. Some of them are, you know, multimillionaires, and they're very successful, but they tend not to be very happy. And we find the reason is ego. Ego really gets in the way, and for lack of a better way to say it, you don't say this on recordings, but in speeches I tell people, you know, I live in Palm Beach County, Florida in the winter, and the best example I've ever seen of an upper-class thinker is Donald Trump. And that does nothing to take away from his success or anything like that, because, you know, I've been to Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach. It's a beautiful place. He's hard to beat as far as success goes, no question. But he's the most ego-driven performer I've ever met in my life. I've never been around at all, period, or ever heard about, or read a book by, you know.
Yeah.
And so and his ego is what gets in his way, and he doesn't know it. He doesn't realize it. And most of those people are not, you know, if you said, who's the happiest guy in the world that's a famous person, most people would not put him first on the list. You know, his number is one of his keys to success in his book is revenge. Ooh. This is a 60-year-old guy, and this is what he's figured out about life, that revenge is one of the most important things to success. Mm-hmm. So obviously he's in his own way. He doesn't know it, because usually when someone's in a level of consciousness, they can't see it, the forest for the trees. So he doesn't know this is his number one enemy. He thinks it's his number one asset, probably. So that's upper-class consciousness. The ego gets in the way of their happiness, and they can't figure it out. And again, this is the phenomena of a lot of the baby boomers who set out to get the big house and the money in the bank and the fancy car and the golf club membership or whatever it is they were going for. They get it, and then they say, is this all there is? And this is a very popular syndrome with upper-class earners. Is that they get? I mean, I've interviewed thousands of them, and what they say is, I thought success was going to feel a lot better than it does. Well, it's because probably they thought their ego drove them to think that success was going to make them happy, where success, as you know, Bob Proctor and I talk about this all the time, success is really has nothing to do with happiness. It has to do with opportunities. It opens doors for you, and it gives you a lot of opportunity. You can be more comfortable. You can do what you want, when you want, with whom you want, for as long as you want. You know, you don't have to answer to anyone if you've got success. But it has very little to do with happiness. It's just not. One is left brain logic, and one is right brain emotional. It's just a totally different thing. But a lot of ego-driven performers count on their success to make them happy, and they say, well, when I get this, I'll feel happy. And, of course, that's a formula for failure. But the highest level is the great one, and that's world-class consciousness. And this is probably 5% of the world's population or less. It's probably less. But these are the people that have the same success as the upper class, but they don't have the ego that's in their way. So instead of an ego-based consciousness, they operate from what we call a spirit-based consciousness. And I don't mean it in terms of God or religion or anything like that, although some of these people tend to be people of great faith, the religious faith, let's say. But I don't mean it in that way. I mean they operate from their spirit, and they do things in the sense of most of the time in from their spirit, as opposed to what it's going to make them look like or who's going to think they're a big shot or whatever. It's not so much ego. It's more spirit-driven. So as a result of that spirit-driven consciousness, they tend to be they're the happiest people I've ever interviewed after 23 years of interviewing top performers. They're the happiest people I've ever met in my whole life. Not just because they're successful, but because they come from a spirit-based consciousness.
And would you also say that the world-class performers, when you meet them, they tend to be more humble or humbler than, if that's a word?
Absolutely.
They tend to be more the general, that you'd say, okay, how does it feel to be with a billionaire, let's say, and you expect this person to come through with like this, you know, I mean, array of people behind them, and then you realize that these people are, you know, very down to earth.
Absolutely. No, you hit the nail on the head. I'm not saying they're perfect. I'm not saying they don't have egos. I'm just saying most of the time, you know, they operate from a spirit-based consciousness, and I think that's why they do tend to be more humble, and people tend to like them more, which means that's probably a big reason, because a lot of times people think, well, the person's really successful, so they're probably pretty full of themselves or conceited or whatever, and they're not. These people are not. Because of that lack of ego, and they tend to have healthier relationships, which is probably the number one reason they're happier. Mm-hmm. And so these people get the success and the happiness, whereas the upper class don't ever. They're always trying to get more success because they're trying to fill the happiness bucket. And of course, the success is never going to fill the happiness bucket because it has very little to do with it. I mean, how many big steaks can you eat, and how many big cars can you drive? And after a while, it's kind of all the same. So, but they don't really ever believe that. So it really hurts them, whereas the world class have both ends. They've kind of got it. If when I first came out with the book, PBS called, or I'm sorry, NPR, I've got PBS on the mind, NPR called, National Public Radio called me, right when the book came out, and they interviewed me, and they said, you know, do you believe, after interviewing all these people for almost a quarter of a century, you know, do you believe that it's possible to have it all? And, you know, I'll say to your audience the same thing I said to them. I don't know for sure, but if anyone does, it's the world class.
Now, would you say that a person, because there's so much in here that you can really go in and separate. For example, I see and with my own interpretation, I say, okay, most of the people will say who don't have money will say, well, this is the association that I have with money. And when you look at the middle class, the next level of consciousness is the higher, the upper class, which it's almost like, you know, they go from one level to the next, and that next level is the one that's associated with ego and significance. And because they're not really looking at the other level where they're spirit-based, where it's more like, what can I do for others? It's not just for my own consumption that I want to have money, but it's for what I can do with that money that I want to persevere, and which requires a different level of thinking. It requires that different distinction to say to yourself, okay, why am I doing what I'm doing, and why do I want to undertake this journey? You know, what is my vision across the other side, like what you referred to at the beginning? It's, you know, just to make myself, I think, clear, you spoke of the 25 distinctions between middle class and world class. And I think those, when you look at the world class, you're looking at feelings and emotions. You're looking at a lot of the I guess you could say, compensation that you would gain from your output. And this is something that I think, you know, like when you speak and you say middle class is ego and world class is creativity, you know, one is definite and the other one's more like open, and it involves who you are as a person, it involves your vision, it involves your dream, it involves a loftier way of being. Kind of like you said, you know, the world class is happier, they're the most happier or happiest. And, I mean, can you talk about that as well?
Sure. Well, you know, I'll give you an example of it. I think one of the things that makes the distinction, that differentiates, let's say, the middle class from the world class, and we suggest to people all the time that they skip the upper class. You know, it is higher on the scale, but just to make it, you know, just to make it, put some method to the madness, to the philosophy, we put it higher because they're more successful. But I think I'd rather be a middle class conscious as an upper class, because they're so ego driven that they drive people out of their lives, and it's a happiness issue, so, and it's a lack of fulfillment issue. But if you look at one of the major pieces of differentiation between middle class and world class, is the idea that that the middle class thinker lives in a state of delusion, and what I mean, and the world class thinker lives in a state of objective reality. And so I'll be more specific. A lot of middle class thinkers that I've coached over the years, and I've done the same thing. I mean, I that's what I always tell audiences. You know, I know middle class thinking well, because I've been a middle class thinker most of my life, and I still have fits of it all that I deal with it every day, because it's a lot of programming. When you've been programmed for, say, 25 years to believe certain things, you're not going to change those beliefs overnight. I mean, certainly I've changed a lot of beliefs, but they do creep back in, because it's years and years and years of conditioning, especially from childhood, where you just accepted it because you didn't know any better, that kind of thing. But if you look at the middle class, whereas the middle class are more delusional, and specifically what I run into all the time is, and I used to do the same thing, so I'm not criticizing anyone, because it's really just about beliefs and programming, conditioning. But a lot of people in the middle class thinker category think they're putting in a middle class effort, expecting world class results. And that's something that happens. I watched as I became a speaker and a full-time professional speaker in 1996, and I watched a lot of people that were sort of in my class, for example, that would be just one example, that wanted to be speakers, probably 50 or 60, and I think two of us really made it, and the rest didn't. And I still hear from those people all the time who say, you know, I don't understand, you know, why, you know, you and this other person made it, and I didn't make it, and these other people didn't make it. I think we're really good speakers. And the truth of it is, I don't say this to them directly because I don't want to hurt their feelings, but the truth is they didn't put in the work. They expected a world-class result, and they never put in a world-class effort. But they expected it. So they expected to just perform like the average person and put in an average person's work ethic, and then get this world-class result suddenly, like winning the lottery. And it is kind of a lottery-like mentality. It's a delusion. And it's sad because they're expecting something that's never going to happen unless they change their ways. Unless they change their effort. Whereas the world class are in more of a state of objective reality. They know where they are, they know what it's going to take to get there because they've done the research, and they know what they're willing to do to get it. And then they either go for it and expect it, or they say, you know what, I'm not willing to do what it takes, and that means I'm never going to get it, and I'm okay with that. But they're operating from objective reality, and that's a big, big distinction, because the enemy of the whole mental toughness process, in my mind, is delusion.
Wow.
The person who thinks they're going to get something, they're going to win the lottery, and they don't even play. You know, that kind of a thing. I think I'm expecting this great result someday, you know, my ship's going to come in mentality, and they're not really doing the work that world-class performers do to get it.
And
it's sad, you know.
You know what, that's exactly what you mean by that objective reality, where you realize, like, in order for you to move forward, you have to know where you're standing. And unless you're willing to accept that which you see, you're unable to really go forward because you're just deluding yourself as to what you think is. And I know
exactly. And it's what I always tell people is, you know, I've gone through the same thing. I've done the same thing to myself, so I'm not standing on a mountain being holier than thou. I've definitely done it many times. So I get it. But at least realize what you're doing. So we always tell people, look, you know, it's like jumping off a ship 2 miles out from, or a boat 2 miles out from the shore. You know, you got two choices here really quick. You know, you're either going to drown if the boat's going, the other way. You're either going to drown or you got to start swimming, and you got to start swimming now. You know, there's no time to play games. So either make up your mind that you're going to make it to the beach and you're going to survive, or just let it go and don't worry about it and just go under. But don't think you're going to stand there and paddle and dog paddle and you're going to survive, because it's not going to happen. You're deluding yourself. Start swimming now, you know, and start seeing the beach, you know, and don't expect something to happen that's not going to happen without that massive amount of effort.
And I think what you also say, it's about if you want to say, I always say, you know, you sink or swim, but don't just sit there and waddle in the water, because eventually it's, you know, you're going to be overtaken by that. And it's really about becoming aware and then doing what it takes to really go forward. And I think you're, you know, just going back to your book, the principles there, what you've shared and the education behind it, I just think it's really a great place that people can go to and really start. And I will say something. I will confess that I believe your book needs to be read like, you know, I'm not saying that that's right, but it is just every single thing that you say, it's almost like it should be read like, you know, one segment a week or one segment a day, because there's so much in there that you want to process and to really value everything that you've imparted.
Well, I appreciate it, and, you know, and I wish I could take credit for it, but it's sort of the wisdom of the ages. It's the wisdom of the ages seen through my eyes. But I wish I'd have come up with all this stuff. Of course, I didn't come up with any of it. It's been around for forever. You know, it's just putting in a different. I think some people really respond to it because it's in a package that makes it more. You know, my philosophy on personal development and success and all that has always been. At least I get, probably because I had to do it this way because I'm a real simple person, is that I always try to take something that might be complex to somebody and try to break it down into an eighth grade kind of an understandable piece of material. And a lot of people respond because they read the book and they say, geez, I never understood this concept before. Now it's more concrete for me. And I think probably I write like that because, and I have a new book coming out in April, coaching the mental toughness process, which is actually coaching the mental toughness secrets. It's a companion book to this book for managers of corporations and coaches and things like that who want all the critical thinking questions that I ask these teams and whatnot. And it's really broken down. And I think probably I did that because I need things broken down for me. So I thought, well, you know, that's probably why I write like that. But if anybody relates to it, I think that's why. Because the wisdom, I wish I could take credit for the wisdom, but I can't.
No.
Wisdom was there long before, you know, I was, so.
Well, it's just your ability to, you know, it's all, what comes easy to you, it's funny because the rest of the people will be like, well, I would have never gotten one of those. I mean, you have 177 secrets. You know?
Well, 20 years of interviews with top people, after a while you see patterns. You know, you start. I really used to question, Sandra, I don't know how you feel about this and how the people listening to this feel, but I used to, I mean, 20 years ago, if you'd have said, you know, why, and I used to ask myself this question, you know, why is it that some people are so much more successful than others? It was really kind of a mystery, as I think it is to most people. Because I think if it wasn't to most people, that wasn't a mystery, and they realized how not how easy it is, but how predictable it is to get to the world-class level, at least of success. I mean, you could be world-class in a lot of different areas, but if we're just talking about success and making your life easier by being successful, let's say financially and in other areas, I think if they saw there were patterns that you could predict where if someone was going to make it or not, they would go do it. But I think it's not because they can't do it. I don't think it's because they don't want to do it. I think it's because they don't believe it's possible. They think that the world-class performers out there, you know, are living in Disneyland, like we're living in some other world that they're not smart enough to enter, or something of those lines. And of course, it couldn't be any farther from the truth, because most of the world-class performers I've interviewed are average people who learned the system. They learned how the system works, and then they followed the system, and their success was pretty predictable. I don't think it's a desire issue with most middle-class performers as much as it is a belief issue. They just don't believe it's possible, and all the people that surround them, their friends, their family, their group, let's say, that they spend the most time with, that influences their consciousness on a daily basis, they're reinforcing those beliefs that this is not really possible for them.
And that is, you just hit it. I mean, it is so perfect what you just said, because We do talk about that. Talk about your peer group. Talk about, you know, who are the people that you are aligned to. What is your mindset? What is the mindset of beliefs? And it's interesting just to make the parallel of, it took Napoleon Hill 20 years, and Andrew Carnegie called him in and said, this is what I would like for you to do. Are you willing to do what it takes? And I'm not going to pay you. Did you know? You knew the
sure,
story, I'm sure.
Yeah, sure. Famous story, yeah.
You know, and what I say to people and what I personally believe is, we are in a new century where we are creating our life as we see it. We are the philosophers. We are the authors. We are those visionaries. We are those people that today, the world as we know it, belongs to people of the past. You know, and often you'll say, I mean, I've heard from a lot of people in the education department and from different areas dealing with children, that they say, where are our leaders?
Right.
Where are the heroes? Well,
right.
We're right there. We have, just like you, just like myself, just like everyone listening, we all have the same ground that we're stepping in to say, if I believe something, I can make it happen. If I don't know how to do it, then let me figure out a way. And I think that's what you are also explaining here, with the fact that it is available based on your belief. If you believe it, you know, you can make it happen. But it starts off with that belief.
Well, I think you're right. And I think I was speaking to a group the other day, and we were talking about vision, and I have this process that's partly in the book that, you know, we talk about, and I do this with companies all the time. We get them to write their vision out, almost like a business plan, but we call it an emotional business plan, because it's really about, you know, what would be the most exciting, if I could write my own ticket in my life, what would that look like? And as much in excruciating detail, and these things end up being 10, 15, 20 pages long, and they describe their life 5 to 10 years if there were no limits. And people do the exercise in this group the other day. I was out in California speaking, and they said, well, this is all great, and we're, you know, it's very exciting, but this is delusional, because there's no way it's going to happen. And so I said to one of the managers, now this is a corporate manager making $200,000 a year, and I say that only to say that it has nothing to do with the fact that he's a super educated guy. He's got a master's degree. He's making, compared to the middle class, he's making a lot of money and that kind of thing. And he says, well, how am I, you know, how, this is delusional. I said, well, why do you say it's delusional? He goes, because I don't know how to do any of these things.
Hmm.
Now, think about that. And I said, well, why would you have to know how to do any of them? And he says, well, if I'm going to accomplish it, I've got to know how to do it, right? And I said, no, not right at all. No. And he says, well, and they all looked at me like I was crazy. I said, you don't have to know how to do any of this stuff. There are people who can help you. And if one person doesn't know how to do it, chances are you can assemble a team. Just as you mentioned in the intro, Sandra, about our board of advisors. We've got the most powerful, by far, board of advisors in the professional speaking industry, and that was by design, and it was because they were all Bill Gove students. And, when Bill and I got in the business together in 96, you know, I asked Bill, I said, you know, what I'd like to do is put a brain trust together, not a board of directors, but a board of advisors, people we could go to and say, what do you think about this idea? And we tap into that brain trust. Well, these are 14 of the biggest, so they started out as 15, of the 15 of the biggest, the highest grossing speakers in the world. And every time we had an idea, we'd throw it by the board, and they'd say, yes, no, I'm not really sure, here, try this. Now, what was that worth to our company over time? Millions and millions and millions of dollars. Because what did it cost us? Nothing. Zero. They didn't charge us a penny, never have paid them one penny in 12, almost going on 12 years now.
And that's the power of the mastermind.
Yeah, we didn't. Yeah, exactly. We didn't know how to do a lot of the stuff. They showed us how to do it, and they gave us ideas, and then we developed the ideas. So I think most people don't go after big dreams because I used to think the same way again, because they think, well, I don't know how to do this, but typically someone somewhere does, or a group of people can help you, and people are willing to help. I mean, world class performers are well known for being, they're not easy to get to, but once you get to them, they're very helpful.
Well,
and so, yeah.
I just met you last week, and we just exchanged business cards, and here you are.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a matter of opening up your belief system to say, you know, I don't have to know how to do all this stuff. I need to go, you know, it's like, you know, you go to a financial person. I was talking to our financial advisor the other day, and I said, well, what about this? And I said, is that even possible? And she goes, well, of course it's possible. And I said, well, how do you know? She goes, I've been doing this 25 years. That's how I know.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, right, of course. That's why I'm paying her. Because she's had a level of awareness when it comes to money management that I'm not even going to ever be at, and don't really care to be at. But I can pay a few bucks to get her to advise me, and I can save myself, you know, 20 years of learning.
And it's who you align yourself with, of course.
Yeah, exactly. So there's so many smart people out there that are willing to help, and that it's just so it kind of makes anything possible. And it's very exciting. I don't think most middle-class thinkers realize that. I never did. I never heard that in college. You know, I don't know about you, but I didn't learn that until I started interviewing all these world-class performers. And I would come back, and I tell a story in speeches all the time. I go back to the, you know, I'd be having a beer with my buddies at the bar somewhere, and they'd say, I'd tell them these stories, and they'd say, oh, you got to be kidding me, Siebold. You're like us. You're a kid from Chicago. I mean, you're like from a working-class group here. We go work for the fire department. We work construction. That's not who we are. Those people are living in another world. And I'd think, yeah, they're kind of right. I mean, that's not where I really come from and all that. And then I would tell that to the world, the next people I interviewed when I was out talking to these world-class performers in places like Palm Beach and Aspen and all the fancy places that they go. And I would tell them that, and they'd say, well, who are you listening to? You want to get where they are? Well, then listen to them. You want to get where we are? Listen to us. And I thought, yeah, pretty good idea. And of course, they were right. No question about that.
It's moving outside of that. Well, I said that at 30 minutes we were going to take questions, and of course, you know, there's so much that you are here to say, and just so much. But of course, we have 9 minutes to the show, so we are going to take some questions. But I also want them to have your information so that they can get your book and just look at everything. If you could share some of that.
Sure. The book is sold only one place. It's on our website. The bookstores actually buy through the website as well. So it's www.mentaltoughnesssecrets.com. MentalToughnessSecrets.com. And a new book will be coming out about in April, the coaching book of this program. So that's the next one. But that's the first book. That'll give you an idea of the philosophy.
And you also have an affiliate program through that as well.
We do.
So listeners can go on and subscribe to that and become the fans, the diehard fans that one can become when one gets across all of that information that you have out there.
Sure.
Because I will say I am a fan. So, you know, this is for me really is it's something that's going to really go a long way. Like you said, you mentioned an 8-year-old understanding. Did you say 8-year-old or 8th grade level?
Either way. You know, I said 8th grade, but it's really either way. You know,
okay.
Just a basic idea.
Well, I definitely plan on using this with the at-risk kids, so this is why I'm just so, you know, I'm just beyond myself with excitement. But with this said, I do want to take the call. That's a 307 phone number, so if you have any questions, just speak up. If all you're doing is listening, then that's okay. Hello, you're on the air, 307. Did you have a question for Steve? Okay, I'll mute that person back out, and we'll take another caller. Hi, this is 561-512. You're on the air. Hello, would you like to ask any questions? Steve?
I can't hear that.
Okay, no, it didn't come through, so we were able to use our last minutes then to just take this and make some closing remarks as to the distinctions that you've made after having gone throughout the world and spoken to so many world-class performers. Where are you going next? Where are you pursuing your endeavors?
Well, I just want to say one thing I think might help some people depending on where they're at. You know, you mentioned, you know, being a fan a second ago, and I wanted to say something about that might help other people. You know, I'm a fan, too. I'm a fan of all these personal development authors and speakers that you and I both know and a lot of people probably listening know. And I think that it's the funniest thing. I was talking to Keith Harrell earlier, who's probably the most popular corporate speaker in America right now, phenomenal speaker, and a good friend of mine, and we've worked a lot together over the years. And, you know, it's one of the things Keith and I talk about, and others, Proctor and I have talked about this, and so many speakers, that we're all big fans of each other's material, and we learn from each other. We don't agree with everything everybody's, you know, all of us say. Obviously, we have different philosophies and angles and stuff like that, but I'm in my office right now, and I have a wall full of books. I mean, in my house in Atlanta, I have 3 or 4 walls, I mean big walls, full of books, thousands and thousands of books, and most of them are personal development by people I work with and people I've just studied and been a fan of. And I would recommend that to everybody because, you know, there's so many great, you know, interpretations of all this personal development stuff that, you know, I hope you'll give my shot, my stuff a chance, the mental toughness stuff, but I would also recommend that you check out Bob Proctor and Larry Wilson and Mark Victor Hansen and all these great, you know, Doug Weed, all these great speakers and authors that have different ideas. They look at the same thing. Like a lot of people say, oh, personal development, you're all saying the same thing. Well, the principles are the same. There's no, that's true. There's no question about that. But the interpretation of the principle, the angle from which the author approaches that wisdom, is completely different. And you might like my angle, or you might like somebody else's angle. But I would just suggest for everyone, because I've seen so many people do this successfully, and it's worked for me as well, to immerse yourself in this world of personal development. And if you ever anyone laugh at you, then say, oh, you know, you're reading all that motivational personal development stuff. You know, then you're on your way, because they laughed at me for years about this. I used to take these books on vacation, and I used to study this stuff and go to all kinds of seminars, of course, which I still do. But they don't laugh at me now. But they used to laugh at me then and say, oh, you know, that stuff's all the same. It's all positive thinking, motivational. I would just suggest to you, let them laugh and keep doing it, because the people that follow that after a period of time tend to get the results, and that's why we're all lifelong fans of each other, because it's all worked for us, you know. So it's kind of, once something works for you, they can laugh all they want. You don't hear it anymore, because you know 100% it works. Believe me, it works.
Now I'm going to put you on the spot, and I asked you a question, and you told me. I said, "What is your personal vision?"
What is my personal vision?
And you said it was pages long.
Well, yeah. Well, we have a vision process. So when you say vision to me, I think about our vision process, which is a written out, you know, written vision. I honestly, my vision, and I, you know, obviously it's too long to go into, but my vision really in a nutshell is to just get what I've learned from all these top performers, and the mental toughness process system is really what I you know, I'm known for, whatever you want to say. My philosophy, you know, the middle class, world class, and the we call it the mental toughness process. That's really my contribution so far to the personal development world, is that we've systematized this stuff. So ethereal ideas, I like ethereal, you know, ideas. They're great and everything, but I don't know what to do with them most of the time, because maybe, you know, I don't know how to interpret them sometimes. So what we did was we took all these ethereal concepts, we put them into a more concrete form, so people could say, okay, Monday morning at 8:00, I know what to do. I've got this great concept, but I know exactly what to do, and we call that the mental toughness process, and that makes it palatable. That makes it something I can actually do, and that's what worked for me, and that's so to try to get that process and that system out to as many people as I possibly can before I die, that would be my vision, really.
And I was going to say, if you're standing right there and you're looking back on your life and you say, I left a legacy, what would be the words that would describe who you are?
Well, I think just to help as many people understand that this all is possible, that this world-class, you know, that this world, a world-class life, especially in America, I mean, it's the easiest place in the world, you know, to become a millionaire, to get whatever it is that you want. It's obviously the easiest place in the, I mean, I've worked all over the world, and this is by far the easiest place. And to try to help people overcome these limiting beliefs that, oh, well, that's for somebody else, that's for someone smarter or more ambitious or more highly educated, you know, that I can't have that kind of success. I'm going to have to worry about my bills, let's say, all my life. That just isn't true at all. That just couldn't be more false, especially in this country. To open yourself up and say, and let the masses laugh at you, because once they start laughing at you, you're on the right track. And once they start doubting you, you're on the right track, and start following, you know, all these world-class beliefs, and all of a sudden you start to see results, and they stop laughing. And you start getting what you want. It's possible. So I'd like to open that mindset up to as many people as possible, and some people accept and some don't, but I'm just out there trying to make that happen.
Okay, good. And we have 1 minute now, just one other question for you. What book or what three books would you suggest people that they must have them and must read them?
Well, I think Think and Grow Rich is hard to argue with. Think and Grow Rich was written in 1936 by Napoleon Hill, of course. It's a classic. It's just it's dated, of course, but I think you got to have Think and Grow Rich. I think you have to have Shad Helmstetter's book, What to Say When You Talk to Yourself. It's a little book. You can read it in 3 or 4 hours. I've interviewed Shad Helmstetter many times. He's the genius of the self-talk programming, reprogramming your belief system. He's the genius of the entire world in that area. That book changed my life. It changed a lot of other people's lives. And I think the third one is Play to Win by Larry Wilson. Larry Wilson's the genius of the personal development industry. He's still alive. We've worked a lot together over the years. He's a very good friend. I'm spending New Year's Eve with him, as a matter of fact. But he's the one that people like Bob Proctor and the top people really look to as the guru of personal development. And it's called Play to Win. Those are the three books I would mention right off the top of my head. You got to have those books. You got to read them over and over and over. I've read each one of those books probably at least 12 to 15 times.
Yeah.
In over the last 10, 12 years.
That would be, that is one of the, I know that I heard, I mean, that I've been, that I've listened and just learned the rich value education. The people that are on top of the game, they value knowledge and putting it together.
Well,
and
especially personal education, you know, not so much just formal education is great, but your own personal development education is really just could make you a fortune. It's
well,
really
Steve, you've definitely given us so much, and I thank you, and just it's been a pleasure having you, and I look forward to working with you in the future.
I appreciate it, Sandra. Thanks for having me on.
Bye, Steve.
Take care.